Welcome to the weekly podcast from the Church of England. The aftermath of the Paris attacks, National Prisons Week, and the pilgrimage to Paris all feature in this week's programme. Firstly, the Bishop of Gibraltar in Europe, Robert Innes, talks about how the diocese is offering practical support and prayer in the wake of the Paris shootings and the importance of the hashtag Pray for Paris campaign. Bishop Robert was in Nice visiting the chaplaincy there when he heard about the shootings.
Like your listeners in the UK, we were horrified, unbelieving at what had happened in its scope and scale, sick in heart, mourning, deeply upset. Some of our own members have been directly affected. But through it all, we have been deeply grateful for the hundreds of messages of solidarity that we've received, and we've been sustained by so many holding our folk in their prayers. We're all trying to come to terms with what's happened, and I think there is a growing sense of solidarity, actually, desire to work together to repel this evil and to overcome it. And that seems to be a pan-European phenomenon, which is really encouraging. It's great to see Pray for Paris logos appearing everywhere.
Have you sort of had direct contact with your chaplaincies in Paris or in other parts of France?
I was actually in Nice over the weekend, so yes, I was there in France. People are feeling a lot of sympathy and empathy for the folk in Paris where it actually happened. I've been in touch with our chaplains in our two Church of England churches in Paris, and they've both got stories to tell themselves, and they're doing their best to support their folk and to pray and to comfort and build spiritual strength in the face of a horrible evil.
Prayer is obviously a powerful tool. You've just mentioned there, Pray for Paris. How has it helped people, do you think, in this situation?
Well, our church is here, of course, not just to offer human comfort and pastoral support, but because we believe that it really does make a difference. And our church communities have been praying for the grieving, for the injured, for the medical teams who are working around the clock to help those who've been hurt. We pray for government and world leaders because we believe that prayer changes public opinion, and we've perhaps seen some of that in the last couple of days. And we want to pray too, and crucially, for all those adhering to terrorist ideologies, that their hearts and minds will be turned to peace. I think faith leaders always want to come together after events like this. My own background actually is in Belgium. I was responsible for our Anglican Church in Belgium for 9 years, and it's been of great concern to me that the story has now widened to include Brussels in quite a significant way. I was the president of the Belgian Council of Religious Leaders for a couple of years. I had very good contacts with Muslim colleagues, and I know that the interfaith leaders there have got together and are issuing a united statement. I think this draws religious leaders together, actually, because none of us recognise this evil ideology as anything to do with authentic religion, and we want to demonstrate our solidarity together in opposing it.
Bishop Robert Innes. For further updates from the diocese in Europe, go to www.europe.anglican.org. 80 police officers have joined the Archbishop of Canterbury for a Eucharist service at Lambeth Palace. They were joined by the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, Sir Bernard Hogan Howe, as well as the Bishop and Dean of Liverpool. I spoke to the Reverend Jonathan Osborne, who's the senior chaplain for the Met.
It was the Archbishop's initiative. He visited Scotland Yard about 9 months ago, probably. We had a very frank round-the-table discussion with about 10 officers. The Archbishop was there, and I was there. And then we thought about how we could move it forward. And this is the result. So bringing people from the Christian faith into Lambeth Palace that are police officers and members of staff. It's a really difficult week, and there's lots and lots of officers in the Met, certainly, working to prevent that type of situation happening in London and this country. And people are working long hours, they're working through the night and trying to hold things together. Well, I love my job, but I think I see chaplaincy very much at the coalface. So I don't have a parish, but my parish is 50,000 people across 32 London boroughs, doing a very difficult job. And I have a huge privilege in serving those people and encouraged to do so as well. But I think it's very much being out there and being challenged by what's very real for people. So there's nowhere to hide from police officers, because they all have inquisitive minds, and it's about appreciating the job that they're doing. And it's a really tough job in very testing times. Listening to the comments of people afterwards, they were so appreciative of people making the effort to recognise what they are doing. And that came across in the Archbishop's address. You know, he mentioned it was a difficult week. He mentioned it's testing times. And that recognition is fantastic.
We're in the middle of National Prisons Week, which each year aims to raise awareness of the needs of prisoners and to encourage prayer within our churches and across the wider Christian community. Jo Calladine is Anglican chaplain of HM Prison Manchester. She tells us more about her work and the vital role of prison chaplaincy.
My role as a chaplain in a broad sense is that we're there for everybody who comes into the prison, whether prisoner, staff, visitor, whether they have a specific faith, or any faith or no faith. I think myself and my colleagues very much have a sense that we're there for everybody, to offer support and help and guidance wherever we can. In terms of specifics, we have some legal duties, we call them statutory duties, that we have to perform every day. So we have to see the new prisoners who came into the establishment the night before. We see them first thing in the morning, just to see, a lot of it's just pastoral, make sure they're okay. Often, particularly if they're new in, the first night in jail, I think, is quite an upsetting experience. It's the time, I think, when reality hits home very hard that they're now in custody. So it's making sure that they're okay, as can be expected. They've been in touch with their families. We ask whether or not they're going to be getting visits, and we might be able to just point them in the right direction with regards to advice about how to keep in contact with families. We make sure that their religion is registered accurately, and we give them advice about how they can practice their religion within the jail. We also see the prisoners on our healthcare unit and segregation unit every day too, just to ask if they're okay and if they've got any issues. Chaplaincy is there, and that we're there to represent faith is, for me, it's about that testimony that there is no place where God is not. You know, to me, that's the central message of the Christian faith, that God came down in human form, that, you know, I suppose, especially as we approach Christmas and Advent, God is Emmanuel, God is with us. And I think for a lot of these, certainly a lot of the men I work with, there's very much a sense that they're not worth a great deal. They've perhaps, and without excusing their offences for a second, but often they are a product of quite chaotic, dysfunctional backgrounds, and maybe a place where they don't feel that they've any value. And I believe there's a correlation. The more damaged someone is, the more damaging they will be. And I think it's so important in that context that they have this sense that God is here, that God is not outside the prison. God doesn't stand with the people who condemn them, but God is with them. It was very powerful the first time I ever did Easter at the prison, and being able to say to the prisoners, look, Jesus knows what it is to be arrested. He knows what it is to be put on trial and to be punished. Don't think of him as somebody in a sort of white dress who's very kind of removed from you. You know, he understands kind of some of what you've been through because of the first-hand experience. And I do think that kind of registered with quite a few of the men, that Jesus wasn't just seen as this person in stained glass who was very clean and tidy, but somebody who did understand some of what they'd been through. And I do think that's so important, that there isn't any place where God isn't, and there isn't any person God can't reach out to. So I think that's the thing I feel so passionately in terms of prison ministry. One of the guidelines is that we're not allowed to proselytise, evangelise on the wings. So, and I understand why, and I think that's right, but obviously it's not as if where you can just walk up to people and start sharing faith. So there is that side of it. I think the biggest issue we have, particularly because I think in local jails, they do tend to be very busy. There's very much a revolving door. We have a lot of prisoners coming in and going out on a weekly basis. So sometimes it's just time. You might have a conversation with a prisoner. It might lead then to them asking things about faith. And it would be great sometimes if you could go back. And I often intend to go back and follow it up. But you just find you just get so busy and caught up with other things, you don't often get a chance to get back. So sometimes it's that. I think too, there's sometimes a lot of misunderstanding about what faith is. And again, you just need time to try to unpick that. You know, if you had a group of prisoners that you were seeing consistently, you might be able to start to do some work addressing their questions and so on. And we do have Bible study groups on wings, but again, it can be very difficult just to get those up and running because of the constraints of the regime, with the prison actually being locked down, or prisoners might want to come to the group, but then they have a visit, they'll have healthcare, they'll have a legal visit, and they've got to be somewhere else. So I think there is a lot of interest there. I think there's a lot of prisoners are asking spiritual questions. They might not know that they're spiritual questions, but they are asking questions about their life and meaning and what they're doing with themselves, and is there a purpose? And, you know, we have very legitimate and important answers, but I think it's sometimes just the pressure of the job and time in actually finding, you know, space for those kind of conversations to happen in a meaningful way. One of my favourite things about the job is that I get to work with men and women of different faiths, and I've always been fascinated by other faiths, and I suppose I'm one of the people who I want to look at what unites us rather than what divides us, because for faith we have so much more in common than people of no faith. Yeah, I think as a team we work very well together. It's been great. You know, I mean, the imams have been, you know, horrified by what's happened in Paris, what is done in the name of their religion, and, you know, we can talk about those things. They can talk to staff about those things. You know, it was lovely a couple of weeks ago during the remembrance service that it was a multi-faith, you know, as Christians and Muslims, we stood side by side and conducted, and that, I think it was great for the staff to see that, you know, we stand together. We're people of faith, and for people of genuine faith, it's about love and forgiveness and peace. And I think it's when, you know, when these people are just anonymous and you're only attaching their religion to them, that there's those misunderstandings. When you see a real person and you see what a good person they are, and, you know, even though they might be of a different faith, there is so much more in common with them. You share so much of the same values. And I think when staff and prisoners see that across the prison, then it, you know, I think it goes a great way to help challenge stereotypes and misconceptions and sort of, again, show our common humanity.
Jo Calladine. For more information and resources, you can go to www.prisonsweek.org. Finally, a week after the pilgrimage to Paris set off from London, Tim Mayo caught up with Val Bexon, a pilgrim and Gloucestershire vicar, who reflects on the journey so far.
Well, all things considered, I think I'm feeling pretty good, actually. It's been a bit of a wild and wet and windy day. We've been enduring Hurricane Barnaby today, literally nearly being blown us off into the road. But the worst thing that happened was somebody lost their rucksack cover, so not bad, really. So we've been walking from Brighton to Newhaven, so we've arrived nice and early. We were here before 4 o'clock tonight. I think today's been our shortest walk, only 10 miles rather than, you know, we've been doing 20 some days.
I understand that you've now completed all of the UK side of the walk. How does it feel to have kind of passed that major milestone?
I suppose for me, I've not really considered it as a stopping point, just, you know, we know we've got probably 140 miles ahead of us, so I'm just looking on tomorrow as a rest day, really, because we're just walking to the ferry, and I think we're being shown around Dieppe tomorrow night, so it'll be quite nice to have a slightly easier day to rest up a bit, and then head down to Paris, really. There are the most amazing people on this pilgrimage from all sorts of walks of life who are passionate about climate change in one form or another. We've got people here from charities that do a lot of work in this area. We've got clergy who've been doing stuff in the Church of England. We've had our investment team here from the Church of England today. So, or you never get bored. There's always somebody really interesting to talk to, and that really helps with the walking, especially when it's getting a bit tough. You can get just lost in a conversation. And we've just been having a really good laugh as well.
And finally, could you tell us a bit about how The pilgrims have reacted to the appalling and tragic events of last Friday in Paris?
Well, certainly when we woke up Saturday morning, I think we were all horrified, really. I know when we went into worship on the Saturday morning, it just reduced me to tears, really, when you think it's just utterly tragic that you know, human beings can do that to each other. It particularly hit home for me because my daughter's out there, and she rang me later on Saturday morning, was just in tears, and that, you know, I said to her, well, that is the only response, really. There's nothing else. There's no other response, is there? It's just awful. And so I think, you know, it's made us more determined to go, really, you know, with a sense of joining in a sense of solidarity and support for those people, really, who've lost their lives, their families. And obviously along the way, we don't know what we're going to find in the, you know, we're staying in French homes along the way. These people are going to be really shocked at what's been happening.
Val Bexon there. And you can follow the pilgrimage to Paris on Twitter and Instagram by clicking on the links in the description below or on the website www.pilgrimagetoparis.org.uk. That's all for this week's podcast. I'm Gillian Moody. Thanks for listening.